Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? It's Ray Harkins, and you are tuning in, tuning like you're listening to a radio, to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I am ever present here to bring you people who are involved in independent music, whether that is playing in bands, running record labels, all that other fun stuff that we all like to contribute to. And today is, I'm very excited because this is a friend who I've had for quite some time. I was going to say old friend, but no. I don't have old friends. I just have friends that I've known for a long time. Donnie Phillips. He, once upon a time, was the drummer for a hardcore band called The Warriors, who were extremely popular and, you know, still play some shows here and there and writing new stuff from what I understand. And he transitioned his band design life into a full-time gig at Warner Brothers Records doing design work, and then now runs his own studio from Durango, Colorado, where he works on, like, you know, some really small projects like the new Eminem and, you know, Alice in Chains, some other small stuff, right? But I just really love people that have come from our world and have the all the aesthetic stuff of our independent music scene rattling around in their heads as they continue to work with artists that, you know, might not have come from our scene or have any context for where it is we're coming from. But anyways, that's what we got going on. And what else do I got to tell you about? NoEcho.net. You got to visit them. They are a great website that discusses all of the punk hardcore happenings, not from a news perspective, but just like a really in-depth interviews. And it's a great site. You need to check them out immediately. And what else do I need to tell you? I need to tell you to have a good holiday, a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, whatever it is you celebrate. I hope it's rad, because this is the time of the year where obviously you're supposed to slow down and reflect on your past year and do all that fun stuff. But I just ultimately want you to slow down. Just take a minute to breathe. Look at the things that matter around you. Hold those things close and tell the people that you love them. Because that's I know it sounds like such a cliche, or it's like, oh, hey, you gotta tell people you love them. You hear that crap all the time. But, like, you legitimately need to tell people on an almost daily basis, whether it's family members or friends or whatever, that you love them. And don't be afraid to use that word, because I know that it's always weird. Some people are like, oh, I can't say I love that person. And, you know, it may make them feel uncomfortable if I say love. No. Like, yes, it may initially, the first time or two, but the more you do it, the more it reinforces it. And, yeah, I just firmly believe in that. So do that. Spread that positivity and spread that love. And next week, I was originally going to take it off, but we're going to have a special episode. I did a very cool sort of roundtable discussion while I was on tour in Canada with the rest of the guys in my band Taken. And I don't know, I was like, this will be fun. This will be on our drive from Montreal back to Toronto. And we just kind of chopped it up. I asked some, you know, leading questions about, you know, playing live and being in a band. And then we kind of, you know, went off a bunch of different tangents, but it was a really fun chat. And frankly, it was insightful for me to get to know some people who I've spent, you know, a majority of my life with, either in vans or playing in bands. And yeah, it was great. And I just think it's also a very good reflection on why we stay involved with this stuff as we get older. Cause you know, we can bail out at this point, but nah, man, nah, brah. So yeah, those are all the business pleasantries. You should actually, everyone, tell a friend about this podcast. Tell a friend about Jabberjaw Media. Tell a friend that you should be listening to this particular show or shows that are like this, because podcasting is at such an interesting juncture in the media landscape where, you know, everyone has their own opinions on what's good and what's not. And the only way that people kind of sort through that is personal recommendation. Yeah, you can have a million algorithms spitting stuff out at you, and they're probably right a majority of the time, but nothing beats a friend being like, yo, you need to check this out. It's like, oh yeah. And then if you hear about it again, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to check it out now. Two people telling you to check out something. That's like what happens to me. Someone says, hey, you should listen to this band. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll put it on my agenda. And then I don't listen to it. And then someone else goes, hey, you should listen to this. I'm like, you know what? Yes, I do. I absolutely do. So do that for a friend this holiday season. And yeah, like I said, Donnie, great chat, played drums in the Warriors. And it was just a really, really fun conversation that we had about the artistic process and everything else. So here is Donnie, and I'll talk to you after the episode is over. I think, honestly, and you can correct me if I am wrong, but I think the first time that we actually sort of formally met, you know, shook hands is, I'm taking you back to, I think it possibly was in Fresno. So I was, okay, here, and tell me if this triggers a memory. So okay. I took the band Glass Casket on tour. Because you know, they had never toured before, and like I was working at Century Media, and you know, they were just children, and I was like, they were a band that was doing really well for us. So I was like, I don't want their first experience on the road to be like something that they are just like terrified of, you know? And so anyways, Glass Casket was on tour with the Warriors, and I think the first time we met was at that particular, I don't think it was the first show, or it might have been, I don't know, but I just remember, I think I remember meeting you there because like either you were doing merch or something like that, and I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, I know of your band, and you know, you seemed like a cool dude, but I don't know if that triggers a
bit. Well, I had you fooled because I'm not cool, number one. And, dude, I feel like I knew you before your Century Media days, though, because like I remember when you got that gig and everyone was like, whoa, Ray's like the man. He works at Century Media, all this stuff, you know? So like I think at least my knowledge of you predates your Century Media days. I don't know. It really has been a long time.
No, it has. But I mean, I think like, I mean, as probably you experience on a, you know, weekly basis, where there are people that you know, but like you might not have ever met. And so I was aware of you prior to that, but it was one of those first things where it's like, oh, cool. Like you're that dude that is like, I've just, you know, known of you for a while.
Yeah. You were a scene celebrity. I don't know if people know this about you. Well, I know people are familiar with Taken and all that stuff, but you know, growing up in the Southern California hardcore scene, going to shows at Che and, you know, Chain Reaction and all that stuff, you were kind of a man among men, you know, like you had this like really huge personality that I always looked up to. And, yeah, it's hard to put my finger on it, but you were a man of note, you know? So,
well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. And dude, like, I mean, you think you're interviewing me today, but I want to interview you as much as, Because like there's so much, like I've known you for years, but there's stuff I don't know. Like I'd like to go deeper with you, you know, because like you're the guy with the biggest smile on his face every time we're in a room together. And I want to decode that. I want to know what makes you tick. And I mean, following the podcast, I definitely get a better sense of that. Yeah. But you're an interesting dude.
Well, I appreciate that. We can ping pong back and forth, whatever you want to know. But
I'm going to turn every question around, dude. Watch it happen.
That's fine. I'm into that. But the thing that, you know, struck me about meeting you and on that tour in particular, I kind of felt, you know, even though that was, you know, ostensibly towards the end of my touring life. And, you know, I mean, I toured a little with Makoto as well, but like, I really felt like that type of touring was kind of shifting from what I knew in regards to like technology and, you know, being able to like not have an atlas with you and you could just use your phone or GPS or whatever. Well, not your phone at that time.
I don't know how we did it. Yeah. I remember my brother, like day before tour, printing out MapQuest, you know, printouts and just having a giant folder. And if you lost that folder, you're totally screwed. And half the time you'd get so lost that folder didn't do you much good, you know. and you have to actually stop and ask for directions. I mean, you know all that stuff. It's
yeah. Well, no, but the reason I bring that up is like I just felt a shift there. And I mean, since you lived in both of those worlds as well, you kind of, you know.
Yeah.
You know, did you feel, I guess, kind of the evolution of touring as you were, you know, kind of into it, just because it was sort of that tipping point of those early 2000s years?
Well, totally. I remember Internal Affairs got signed to Malfunction at the same time Warriors got signed to Eulogy. And we were comparing like deals together, me and Corey. And Corey was like super pumped because Malfunction just bought him the brand new iPod. And he was like, dude, we could play music for like, you know, X amount of days straight without repeating a single track. And I was like, why didn't Eulogy buy us an iPod, you know? Like, but yeah. So like, Dennis and Corey were super just like rubbing it in our faces that they got the iPod. But Eulogy helped us with the van. But as far as technology is concerned, I mean, I only toured with Warriors for about 2 years. And in that window of time, I would say that I was operating more in the old school, you know, as far as like, you know, smartphones, like I think Javi had one of those Sidekicks that flipped, you know, the screen kind of flipped around. Yep. But I don't think that was equipped with maps or anything like that. So, I mean, as far as the technological shift is concerned, technology didn't help us much, man. But it definitely happened as soon as I quit the band and they started touring like Europe and like doing all that stuff. They were able to utilize technology much to their advantage, right, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time to be doing what we were doing, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, we'll discuss more of your band life in a little bit, but, you know, kind of shifting the focus on you personally.
Sure.
Were you, you know, you and your brother came up, did you come up in Tehachapi or did you come up in, is that correct or no?
Yeah. Tehachapi, weird little town. It was a great place to grow up for sure. Small town. Most of people's parents were either employed by the Air Force Base, the wind farms that are there, or the prison. There's like a maximum security prison there. So it was a cool place to grow up too, because like most people's, like we were all kind of like latchkey kids, you know, because everyone's parents like worked late, or, you know, if they worked at the prison, a lot of them were working graveyard shifts. So we kind of ran amok, and it was a great place to run amok because like the natural beauty there is, unparalleled. If you look at places like Bakersfield or Lancaster, the two bigger cities that sandwich Tehachapi in the mountain range, in between those two, like really, you know, kind of crummy cities, it could have been a a worse upbringing for sure. It was a cool place to run around.
Yeah, that's true. I've never really reflected on Tehachapi like that, where, you know, it is that sort of, you know, rural suburb, you know, even though that doesn't, those two words don't necessarily make sense together, but like you said, it has that natural beauty that is the desert, and it doesn't, you know, like, you can't compare it to, you know, Fresno, Bakersfield, all these cities that kind of feel, just like you said, sort of, you know, in run down in certain respects, and like no one goes there to be like, oh man, I love Bakersfield, can't wait to visit there.
But
Tehachapi has more of that kind of, you know, no, people don't know about it necessarily, but when they go there, it's like, oh, it's a pretty cool city.
Yeah. So yeah, Tehachapi, it's like, I mean, there's some Native American history there too. You know, it's a railroad town. So, I mean, the history is pretty rich in that area. And, I wouldn't change my upbringing for anything. You know, in the mid-90s, like early 90s, mid-90s, there was a lot of white flight from Bakersfield in Lancaster to Tehachapi. And with white flight, there's obviously grounds for a punk and hardcore scene. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at, you know, Orange County's history and stuff, like, it's, there's some parallels there, you know? But it was like, I'm grateful that there was some sort of scene for such a small town, for it to have like such a vibrant, small but vibrant punk and hardcore scene that changed everything for me, you know, as a designer, as a musician, as a human being.
Right. No, absolutely. It's cool. And it, correct me if I'm wrong. Is your brother your twin brother, or is he just older, younger brother?
He's my twin brother.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I do have a younger brother, Mikey, who's also a musician and designer in his own right. But Danny's my twin.
That's a weird experience. Like, how, I mean, you know, you clearly you're, you know, incredibly close to your brother, but you know, was it one of those things that you, I mean, you know, you knew your life as it is. It's not like you had anything to compare and contrast, but was it always kind of the token, like, oh, look, there's those twin brothers from Tehachapi. Like, you guys never...
Well, we're fake twins, right? So we're fraternal. We don't really look like each other. I mean, we probably looked more like each other back then. I mean, I have longer hair and a beard, and my brother's super clean cut now. We always had our hands in stuff, you know, whether it be music or art and stuff in our hometown. So, I mean, we had like a decent reputation, but it was weird. We grew up with a lot of twins. There was a lot of twins in Tehachapi. Some of our best friends growing up were twins.
That's weird, dude.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know if there was something in the water or... Right. You know, like, fertility drugs were just like, were just flying off the shelves or what? Like, I don't know. But yeah, we grew up with a lot of twins. So, I mean, we certainly, and we grew up with some identical twins who I don't know, they probably were more novel, I guess, you know, because they do look like each other. But we couldn't, like, you know, take tests for each other or anything like that. I don't feel his pain, you know, he could have a broken leg right now and I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Right. No, that's, I mean, that makes sense where, you know, you, even though you were, you know, twins, like, yeah, you could exist. Cause I mean, so many people you see that are, you know, the kind of identical twins, like it's hard. Like you have, not only do you have to, you know, work hard to, you know, live outside of your parent's shadow with whatever it is that they're doing and forging your own path. But then on top of that, you also have to, you know, forge your own path separate from this person that looks exactly like you.
I mean, I mean, and there was definitely that, you know, I think at an early age, my brother and I were separated. Like, we had to go to different schools because our kindergarten teacher thought we were too codependent. So we went to different schools in first grade, and I guess that was an exercise in establishing our independence and our own identity and all that. And I think in retrospect, it was probably a good idea.
Right, right. No, that is. I that's a pretty astute of the teacher to realize, like, hey, they'll, you know, they both will benefit from, you know, not having each other by their side throughout every step.
It's weird when teachers know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or care enough to like do something for their students. Yeah. I think maybe that was I don't know. Maybe that's like old school thinking.
No, that's, I mean, I think that's incredible that.
No, I love every and all teacher. Anybody who teaches, like, I got mad respect for. But I mean, you had teachers, I'm sure, growing up that probably shouldn't have been teaching.
Absolutely. It was just a job. It wasn't a college.
Yeah, exactly.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Casper. Oh my gosh. I love Casper so much. And what is Casper? Is it a friendly ghost? Of course it is. But it is also a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. They got three different models: the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. All of the mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Did you know you were geometric? Well, I did, but you know, that's beside the point. And not to mention, they have an insanely breathable design that helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And it's delivered right to your door in a small, how do they fit that in there, sized box with free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. The best part is that you can be sure of your purchase because they have a 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. It's amazing. And after all, you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping, so why not be comfortable? I just recently got another Casper mattress for my house that I'm moving into. I unboxed it with my son. It was the coolest because basically it's like it comes to life essentially. It starts to breathe and it starts to like stretch out. And my son loved laying on it. I loved laying on it. And oh man, I cannot recommend Casper enough. Please start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/words and using the code words at checkout. That's casper.com/words, offer code words for $50 off. I'm giving you $50 in your pocket right now, okay? Just let me do that for you. Terms and conditions of course apply, but real talk, Casper is amazing. They're supporting the show. I love what they do. I'm so excited to tell you about it. So buy a Casper and love your sleep, okay? Now is the show.
You know, the sort of person that I have always known you to be is, you know, and why I think I've always got along with you and I've always, you know, enjoyed seeing you and having conversations with you is that, you know, you are, and this is a very fine line, I think, where you are, you know, outgoing and you are, you know, I use the word overly friendly, where, you know, some people might be put off by that and be like, dude, like, calm down. But the key fact is, like, you're not a punisher, you know? Like, you know those people who are just going to, like, you know, oh, dude, I can't talk to Donnie right now. Otherwise, like, I'm here for another 2 hours. Like, I can't do that. Has that always kind of been who you are, or is that something that, you know, it started to develop as you, you know, broke out of your shell?
Well, man, I appreciate that observation. I don't know. I feel like I'm the same person I was when I was in first grade to a certain degree, you know what I mean? But yeah, I like to make people feel included, I guess is the right way to put it. Maybe growing up with a twin, I was able to kind of make those kind of social, I'm good at like social cues, I guess, if I were to pat myself on the back for anything, like, sure. I don't know. I can sense if somebody's feeling sad. I know when to comfort somebody. If somebody's feeling angry, I could generally talk them down, you know, that sort of thing. If that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's a good quality. 'Cause I do think that some people, you know, either that's just something they don't pay attention to by choice or it's kind of hardwired in them. But, you know, I identify with you in that where, you know, when you walk into a room and you're kind of, you know, seeing where everybody's, you know, temperature is, so to speak, you do, like, some people are just more sensitive to that. And that's cool that you have that sensitivity where you're just like, oh man, that person's bummed. Let me see if I can help.
Can we fight crime with that ability? Can we channel that into something like really socially redemptive?
Yeah, the overly empathetic. where you notice if someone, like, you know, scowls at another person, and then yeah, you just have to step in and be like, no, you didn't need to do that.
yeah, I'm into that. Let's do that.
Yeah, that's funny. But so, I mean, that's cool that you've always, I guess, just had that general disposition. And I'm guessing because of that too, like as you were going through school, you know, you were, I guess maybe generally liked and you were able to kind of, you know, go in between different, you know, I guess archetypes of what exist in high school, whether it's like, you know, oh yeah, you can hang out with the jocks and you can also hang out with the kids who are obviously into aggressive music.
Yeah. It's funny. I didn't really notice that much like delineation in my high school between social groups, because there was a lot of bleed over, like a lot of the jocks listened to Blink-182 and you know what I mean? So like I grew up with a lot of kids who just like loved 10-yard fight and joined the football team because they wanted to like live that fantasy or something. You know what I mean? Me being one of them in freshman year, like I just wanted my buddy Day joined the football team because he was like super in the 10-yard fight and stuff, and he ended up being really good at football and I ended up being really terrible at it, and I didn't play much in the games, but I got that under my belt, you know. Well, I lived to tell the tale, at least.
Yeah, exactly. You were on the field and you were able to, you know, run around and not die.
That was totally me for sure.
And so, I mean, I do think I wanted to pull on a thread there where, you know, just probably due to the fact that, you know, Tehachapi is a smaller town and there wasn't a lot of choice in regards to who you were surrounded by. You know, you had I mean, most people go through the experience of, you know, whatever they're surrounded by in high school. But, you know, when you live in a larger suburb or city, there's, you know, maybe more choices of friend groups to attach yourself to. But I guess I just find it interesting that, you know, hardcore seems so hardcore and punk seem kind of so pervasive in that community. You know, have you ever kind of paid attention to, I guess, why that was, or was it just like friends influencing each other?
Yeah, it's all Andy Frontier's fault. He got everybody. Well, so he and some of his old friends started a band called Die Hard Youth, who I'm sure you are familiar with.
Absolutely.
They played this Battle of the Bands, and you know how those Battle of the Bands go, like just your typical local Battle of the Bands. There were some bands that sounded like Korn. There was some like ska bands and stuff. And then Die Hard Youth took the stage, and my brother and I were about, shoot, I don't know, like 12 years old or something, maybe 13. And you know, they got up there, and they were a real hardcore band. They had their friends singing along and finger pointing and wearing sports gear and stuff. And I thought it was the coolest thing. I think this show in particular, they were playing under the name New Thugs on the Block or something, which eventually turned into Die Hard Youth. But just the energy of it was so infectious. And it, you know, it was just like a totally different vibe from, you know, the new metal bands and ska bands that were playing that night. And, you know, it wouldn't be until years later where I would meet Andy, and he would put us, you know, the Warriors on our first show. And, you know, the rest is kind of local history or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Like hardcore was was a viable, like, social kind of
activity.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you skateboarded in the mid 90s, chances are you would run into somebody wearing like a Snapcase shirt or something. And, you know, it was just like, both kind of went hand in hand, you know what I mean? Like many people, like skateboarding leads to listening to a song on a skate video, or hanging out with older kids that are listening to hardcore or punk or whatever. And that was definitely the case for my twin brother, Danny, and I. And I'm so grateful for that experience, because, you know, Tatchby, especially like, you know, the Tatchby hardcore scene, we're all like super, super close friends still, you know, like we're all on group texts daily. And these are people like, you know, I've been friends with for God, like over 20 years, some of them, you know, since like elementary school. And having that shared experience driving down to Ojai, or, you know, the smell or whatever, like driving to these shows together, those are like formidable bonding experiences that I wouldn't trade for the world.
No, that's so cool. I love to hear all that, just because it is so, honestly, it's like whimsical is a word I would use just to describe it, because, you know, it was so, you know, there was one person who was kind of spearheading the influence, and it wasn't,
for sure.
And it wasn't coming from some place of like, you know, like a weird power trip where it's just like, oh, you know, like I want to be the person who's, you know, quote unquote, ruling the scene. Cause obviously anybody that has ever met Andy in their life would know, like,
totally.
That guy's not even remotely close to that, but
Andy's the kind of dude who would be like, hey dude, come to a show. And I'm like, you don't know me. Like, I'm a 12-year-old kid. He's like, no, you're going to have fun. Like, do you need a ride? Well, I'll pick you up in the van. Like, we'll go to the show. Or like, oh, that kid can't go because he can't afford like the entrance fee. Like, I knew multiple times, like Andy saying, no, he's getting in for free. Let's go. You know, like, I know his mom's having a hard time or whatever, you know? So it's like, I mean, dude, like, talk about just like a natural leader. You know what I mean? He, without him and without this like formative experience in the hardcore scene, I think it's kept a lot of us like alive, to be honest. You know, like there's a lot of drugs, you know, like the typical seedy stuff that happens in a small railroad town. It kept us like free and clear of a lot of that stuff. And, you know, I mean, we have some friends that you know, have some problems and stuff. But I think a lot of those people who have problems now wouldn't even be here with us, you know, if it wasn't for music. And that's why I love music so much. And that's why, as a designer, I want to like attach myself to music as much as possible.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love that perspective and realizing how, you know, valuable that stuff is. Because I think, you know, probably this, you would echo this sentiment where it's like, nothing bums me out more than, you know, as people get older and they look on the stuff that they were into when they were younger as being, you know, trivial or trite. And
totally, yeah.
And it's like, you know, yes, like you could argue that, you know, maybe some of your tastes aren't as evolved as you are when you're in your mid-30s, but like, that doesn't matter. It's like, dude, like you said, all those, you know, endless nights of driving to shows and, you know, just bonding with people, like, that's real, and not everybody gets to experience that.
No, and we're growing up in a culture that doesn't have those you know, those like rites of initiation, you know what I mean, for lack of a better word, from a youth or like a teen to becoming a man. You know, we don't have those things. So to have hardcore and to have friends that have that shared kind of formative experience, like, I feel like we all went from being kids to being men, as cheesy as that is, because of that shared experience. You know, that was, and that's why we're all still so close. Like, I feel bad for kids growing up that don't have anything analogous to that, you know, like what do kids do? Like, what do you do in a small town if you don't have music?
Yeah, totally, totally. yeah. And kind of, you know, on that notion where, was the Warriors kind of your first band, or did you and your brother do something before that?
We would like jam out in garages and stuff, but no, Warriors was my brother and I's first and last band. You know, we formed in high school with Marshall, Mike, and Javi, and it was great. You know, like, we put out a 7-inch. You know, our like guitar playing hero Vic Takara from Inside Out produced our first 7-inch. So, I mean, that alone, like, we could have stopped after that and we would have been stoked. But then we ended up doing 2 LPs. And then my brother and I quit the band. Danny went to Otis College of Art and Design. I was less keen on, like, the touring kind of lifestyle. And that's when we met some people at Warner Brothers Records who were like interested in the Warriors, believe it or not. I mean, it was a brief kind of interest, you know.
Sure.
But that's when I met some people at Warner Brothers Records. I met a kid named Steve Morales, who's still like a dear friend of mine, who was working in the street marketing department, who was trying to pitch us to the A&R department. And when he found out that I was quitting the band, he was like, "Hey, you do all the design for your band, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Hey, we're looking for a designer." So when Danny went to school at Otis, I quit Warriors and I got the gig at Warner Brothers Records, where I started as a designer in the street marketing department.
Right. That's cool. I love all those, you know, sort of relationships that get formed in random places that you wouldn't expect it to be. And, you know, I guess when you first started playing out, and like you said, you know, you're recording a 7-inch and starting to get shows and everything, was it, did you ever have the sense in your head that, like, okay, like, being in a band is all I'm going to pursue? Because, like you mentioned, you know, you toured with the Warriors for about 2 or so years before, you know, you left. Or was a band just always kind of like, oh yeah, this is just something I'm going to do. Like, I don't have the, you know, quote unquote dreams of, you know, being a rock star or whatever.
No, we were out for money, dude. We were only in Nashville. Man, I hear you ask this question to a lot of your guests, and like, I wish I could give you an antithesis answer, but it's pretty on par what most people would say. I mean, like we started the band in high school. We wanted to play shows with Die Hard Youth, and Andy was really supportive, and you know, we did the 7-inch, and then we got to do our LP with Roger Camaro, who was like, he played bass and drums in No Motive, the band No Motive, in a band who I loved. And so like meeting Roger and him producing our first full length, getting signed to Eulogy, then buying us a van, like all that stuff was so surreal, you know? And Roger ended up joining the Warriors later on, and he's kind of like the primary songwriter for them now. I mean, they're not super active now, but I think they just confirmed a fest. I don't know if it's public knowledge, but they are playing a show this year, which is pretty cool. I'm glad to see that they're still doing stuff. But I mean, dude, like making a career of it, no way was that even a possibility. Like for me, at best case scenario, it was going to be my ticket to see the country and just travel and be with my friends and play music, you know?
Yeah, that was just, you were kind of, you know, just collecting experiences as opposed to, you know, trying to angle this into, you know, the business plan for the next, you know, 5 to 7 years or whatever.
Yeah, and it was crazy. Like, my brother and I were both kind of like the business dudes in the band. Like, we were always kind of like spearheading and organizing and getting stuff printed and, you know, designing merch and all that stuff. And after we left the band, Javier Zarate, who's the guitar player, the fucking coolest dude ever, he took over the business end and like totally killed it. Like, he's like business like guru now. You know what I mean? Like, not only did he take like the Warriors to the next level, like, you know, with international touring and all this stuff, but you know, he's a really successful business dude in the private sector now, you know, in like the cannabis industry, in the merch industry. He started Modern Made Merch. So, I mean, like, these were the dudes I was in a van with, you know what I mean? Like, I was super inspired, like, every day just hanging out with these guys.
Yeah, no, that's super cool, especially when people are driven, regardless of what it is that they're driven to do. You get inspired by that, where it's just like, oh cool, like we're all working on the band stuff, but then it's cool you have all this other stuff and you're like the merch guy, and then, you know, the other guy in the band is the, you know, songwriter, and the other person is, you know, the guy who talks to the record label or whatever. It's cool when everyone's pulling their own weight, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, doing what we did, you know, no one was asking for permission to do it. You know what I mean? We were just doing it. And I think that's why you see so many, like, successful people and personalities come out of this scene, you know? I don't know. It's just like it's underground culture that eventually permeates pop culture, you know? There's this like kind of secret brotherhood of like punk and hardcore kids, like just totally killing it in every industry now. It's so cool to see.
It is, yeah, for sure. And like all those principles were learned, you know, doing the same things that we were all doing. It's like, it's just so, yeah, it is inspiring.
Yeah, man. And it's all Civ and Toby Morse and like fucking Shaka's fault, man. You know what I mean? Like, we're so lucky to have those lyrics to peruse as preteens and teens, you know, whether it's, you know, getting into veganism or straight edge, whatever it was, whatever like positive life choice, like you were able to glean from it. Without that music, you know, I could very easily be doing meth under a bridge right now.
Totally. And where did the, you know, cause like you said, you were doing a lot of the, you know, graphic stuff for the band, whether it's, you know, the merch or the record designs and stuff like that. How did you get attracted to that in the first place? Like, you know, I mean, clearly there's usually one person in the band that kind of, you know, does that, but you know, how did you end up being that guy?
Well, that was always my favorite part of being in a band. Like, I wasn't that good of a drummer. I'm not, you know, but like I wanted to design like the 7-inch and I wanted to do, you know, the hoodies and like whatever it was, like that was always my favorite part. So, and that's what I felt like my contribution to the band really was, you know, like we were playing songs that we'd played for years and I was just botching them, but they're like, whatever, he designed a cool t-shirt, like we'll keep him around, you know? So yeah, I mean, that was always my favorite aspect of it. And I'm just like lucky enough to have made it a career since then.
Got it. But I guess like when you first started messing around with it, was it just one of those things that like, you know, once you opened up, you know, InDesign, you're like, oh man, I'm in love with this? Or was it like, oh, this is kind of fun, I'll play around with it, and then you grew to love it more?
Dude, it was just like, it was looking at other bands' layouts and t-shirts and stuff and being like, dude, their stuff looks way better than ours. Like, how do I do that? You know, I guess it was like a competitive bone that got me to keep, you know, plugging away at InDesign and Illustrator and all that stuff, just trying to replicate like the cool art I was seeing on the album covers like I grew up with, you know. It was certainly a long and painful process, you know, kind of honing my skills or whatever, but like I'm glad I stuck with it for sure.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
Oh boy, rockabilia.com. So, you've heard me talk about them in the past couple episodes, but Rockabilia is your literal best place for merch on the web. And what I'm giving you right now is 15% off. So use this code PC100, that's the number, words or less. That equals 15% off. And it basically, there are amazing things about Rockabilia that I want to let you know about. For one, every design is licensed by the band. So they're getting paid the royalties. It's essentially... it's like buying a shirt at a show, except there's, you know, a little more intricacies behind it because, you know, you get it shipped to you straight at home. They have over 500,000 different items from bands as wide variety genre as, like, you know, you got your Mastodons, you got your Newfound Glories. Trust me, you will find something you like here. I've ordered stuff from them. Shipping's great. Customer service is great. I can't say enough good things about Rockabilia. So go to rockabilia.com. Use the code PC100 words or less, which is obviously the name of the show, and you will enjoy 15% off, okay? Please, Rockabilia is the best place to buy merch online. Don't be fooled by all these ridiculous bootleg companies that, frankly, just don't pay bands, and that's the worst thing ever. So you need to go to Rockabilia, okay? 15% off. Enjoy. All right, now with the show.
And did you, after you graduated high school, like, did you go to college? Did you, you know, I guess, try to hone your discipline from the schooling perspective, or was it basically just all like, I'm not doing school. I'm just, you know, touring and putting stuff together on my own.
No real disrespect to school. But that wasn't really my path, you know. My brother, like I said, like with the Warriors, because he got like a great scholarship to go to Otis College of Art and Design in L.A. And so when he went to school and I quit the band, Danny would come home and he would kind of like teach me the stuff he was learning in class that day. So I kind of got the secondhand education, and I was also dating a girl who was going to the same school. So between the two, it was a lot of learning by diffusion. Danny would teach me, you know, clipping masks or whatever, like kind of rudimentary Photoshop stuff he was learning in class that day. And Mika would like come home and tell me like, oh, you should check out like Barbara Kruger or like whatever artists, you know, popped up in art history or whatever that day. So like I would get a lot of that information just through the people I was hanging out with, you know, and I have like a natural tendency to like look into stuff that I'm interested in. So I'm glad I don't have the student debt to pay off, you know, right now. And it's not to say I wouldn't benefit from like a formal education, but I've been able to get by for sure.
No, that's cool. And you started working for Warner Brothers when you were like, what, 20, 21? Is that when you kind of dove in?
Yeah, no, I wasn't of legal drinking age. So I think it was, I think I was 20 when I first got the gig. So I remember being at a company function and not being able to drink, like I couldn't order a drink or something. But I was 20 and I ended up working there for 7 years, 7+ years.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you know, as you, you know, cause that's, you know, clearly a big boy job where, you know, you get, you know, benefits and a business card and stuff like that, that makes you, you know, legitimate in society's eyes. Were you, I guess, fearful going into, you know, even though it's a world of artistic and creative people, you know, were you nervous at all entering that, knowing that you were going to be working with people who might not have any context for, you know, where you come from and kind of the not saying that like, oh, you're coming in there with a superiority complex, but like, oh man, I'm going to be working with like quote unquote normal people. Like hopefully they get roughly where I'm coming from.
Yeah, you know, it was weird. I mean, growing up in independent music, I had this kind of demonized view of the major label system. And this was definitely my first real job, quote unquote. I mean, I worked at Jamba Juice for a hot second in Belmont Shore in Long Beach. That's where I met Derek Crossley. Whole other story, Straight On Record, shout out. But what was I even saying? Okay, so like I had this really demonized view of the major label system. So like getting the gig there, I was kind of like, oh dude, I'm like fully infiltrating this like evil, you know, corporate, and I'm just gonna like, you know, I'll work here for a couple years and I'll learn the insides and outs, and then I'll start my own label or something. You know what I mean? But like when I got in there, like I only met people who loved music and like listened to the same stuff I was listening to. You know what I mean? It was weird. I was like, what is going on here? Like it kind of caught me off guard. Like I thought I was going to hate it, to be honest, when I first got the job at Warner. But I was hanging out with like-minded people. We were just listening to music, working on like street campaigns for some pretty like big bands. So I mean it was a great experience. And then I eventually took the interest of the head of the art department, Ellen Wakayama, at the time, and she saw some of the stickers and posters I was designing and stuff, you know, some like basic stuff. But she was like, hey, would you like to work in our department, you know, like the proper art department? And I was like, yeah, of course. She's like, well, bring some of your stuff over and we'll, you know, discuss the opportunity. And so the only thing to my credit at that point, as far as music packaging was concerned, was stuff I did for Warriors. and other hardcore bands like Vendetta and you know, stuff with just like skulls and like weird stuff on it, you know, just really rudimentarily like put together. So like I only had a stack of hardcore CDs going into Warner Brothers Records to show for myself. And I mean, it was enough to get the gig, but I think they knew where I was coming from. Frank Maddox was like a big like champion. He's done, you know, countless like epic records for Linkin Park, Deftones. He's like Deftones' go-to art director. A guy I really, really look up to now, but then as well, he was kind of this like mythic character for me. He saw the stuff I was doing and he probably thought it was more funny than good, you know, but, yeah, he championed, me getting into the department and stuff. So that was really cool, man. Like it felt like a family then and it still does.
No, it's really cool, especially too, because I'm sure there were projects that you got put on that you were, you know, incredibly intimidated to dive into, whether or not it's, yeah, whether it's like, you know, communicating with the artist to make sure, like, dude, I better not bum, you know, this person out. Do you have like a random story of, you know, some of an early project that you were like terrified to put
on? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like one of my first packages I did was for Disturbed. It was their album Asylum. And I was super nervous because like I had to meet with David Draymond, the singer, and the whole band. And I was like this little eager kid trying to, I mean, it was probably only like, seven, eight years ago. I don't even know. But, you know, it was really intimidating because, like, I mean, I only know Disturbed by like their music videos and stuff like that, real ornate jewelry coming out of his lip and stuff.
Right.
You know, so going into a meeting with them to discuss like art direction for that record, it was the first time I'd ever gone through the process face to face with like a big band like that. But I had to pitch them on like illustrators and different photographers that we were going to work with. And it went really well. And like David Draymond, the guy I was terrified of, was super nice. I don't know. Nothing ever seems to go the way you think it's going to go. So if like you're super nervous, something's going to go terribly wrong, chances are it's going to go right. And then, you know, I've met with bands who are like, oh, I got this in the bag. And just like there's, I've never had any like personality conflicts, definitely, you know, differences in opinion as far as like art direction is concerned. And, yeah, I mean, you just never know which way it's going to swing.
Yeah, no, that's rad. What, you know, kind of focusing on like, you know, when you decided to leave the band, like, was that, you know, I presume in some respects that was a really difficult decision for you. Or was it really,
no, for sure.
Or was it,
no.
Okay.
Well, it was really hard because I mean, as far as my creative output, that was the most significant thing I had done in my life at that point, was just doing those records and touring. And so I was really proud of like the stuff we did together. But you know, after touring for as long as I did, which wasn't that long, to be honest. I mean, it was like a year and a half, 2 years of, you know, getting in the van, touring, waiting around, doing that whole thing. I just knew that kind of wasn't for me. You know, you meet dudes who are just like lifers, you know, like they have that personality where they could kind of survive and do it. And to be honest, dude, like back in the day, and you tell me, man, like bands like Stick to Your Guns, who have been doing it for like so long, like we only had like two bands to look up to as far as like a role model and a model, like Sick of It All, you know, did it. Madball had been touring for years, but like I feel like there's a lot more bands now who have been doing it as a career for a very long time. Bands like Stick to Your Guns, like I said, like it's so great to see that they've been able to make a living out of this thing. You know what I mean? But there wasn't a lot of bands making a living, you know, doing what we did back then. And again, it wasn't that long ago. We're talking like early mid 2000s.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think that, you know, the thing that I've always tried to like look at is the fact that there, you know, clearly there's a path in which you can, you know, live a life as a starving artist, you know, like where it's like, okay, I'm living, you know, in a closet for $100 a month. Like I'm going to build my life around the fact that there, you know, I can't have any expenses, you know? But the thing that I know that when certain, you know, especially from a music perspective, certain scenes are emerging, it didn't, like, you couldn't even think about it in those terms because it wasn't like, that there was even, you know, money to come in, you know, like that wasn't even an option to be like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can survive off $500 a month. And it's just like, well, no, I can't in a world, I can't even imagine $500 coming to me. You know,
but like, do you think there's more bands like doing it and making a decent living now more so than back then?
I mean, it's hard.
Or is that just like me being like detached and kind of looking at things from an Instagram's perspective? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like is it just me looking in as opposed to like me being on the in back then?
I think that the world hasn't changed so drastically to where, I mean, now there, like you said, there are bands that, you know, have set a precedent and a path, you know, because like, I mean, like you said, the band that I always point to that you could look at were being like, wow, they were touring it and doing, you know, well, was like, you know, Poison the Well kind of broke it open.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Because,
yeah. You could point to bands, like you said, like Sick of It All. And then, you know, in many respects, like Hatebreed and, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Earth Crisis, Strife and Snapcase to a certain extent. But it wasn't until Poison the Well where it was like, you know, you felt like they existed in the same, you know, relative universe. But then all of a sudden it's like, you know, when they're selling, you know, what, you sold $5,000 worth of merch in one night? Like, wow, I guess there is a way, you know, there is a way to do this and like come home with, you know, a couple thousand dollars or whatever at the end of a tour. But, you know, to your original question, I do think it's still just as difficult, especially too with the fact that, you know, there's everybody plays in a band, and there's, you know, no way to differentiate yourself from the 5 million other bands that exist, plus all the bands that came before you as well. But I do think there is.
Yeah.
I think there's.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think to finish the thought, I think there is more willingness to, not willingness to sacrifice, but the idea of like being able to, you know, like I said, that example of, you know, $500 a month or whatever, someone could have that in their head and be like, well, other, like, people have done that now where there is a notion that that could exist. So they can build their life around playing in a band and, you know, coming home with $500 and being like, that's fine. Like, you know, hopefully next time I'll come home with $1,000 or whatever. So.
Right. Yeah, man. It's interesting. I mean, I couldn't at that time imagine making a career of it. You know, I mean, the most that we could hope for, I think, would be to make some records that people cared about years later. And whether we did that or not, I don't know. But like that alone would have been reward enough. Because I mean, bands that we really looked up to, Snapcase, Earth Crisis, all that stuff. Like at that point, all those bands were broken up. Well, no, I guess Snapcase was still touring and stuff. But in Earth Crisis, in a sense, where are they a band? Are they still an active band? I know they've done like reunions and stuff, but anyway, you know, like we just wanted to put out some records and tour, and that was it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, last couple of things before I let you go was the, you know, it seems to me, you know, you got your design, you know, chops and aesthetic by doing a lot of the band stuff and then, you know, working on a variety of projects at, you know, Warner Brothers. Was it, you know, did you always have kind of the ambitions of, you know, where you're at now where it's like, you know, you are your own self-contained, you know, design house and, you know, you have a resume that people are interested in working with you because you have all this, you know, previous work. Was that always kind of the thing, or did you always want to kind of work, you know, attached to a mothership for as long as possible?
Oh, no, my goal was always to kind of like go off and do my own thing. You know, I mean, 3 years ago when I left Warner to do Kill Studio full time, That was a huge jump, and it was a huge like dream come true. Like whether I was going to land on my feet or not was kind of up in the air. But, you know, 3 years later, you know, like, you know, I just did the new Eminem single. Like I'm working with like bigger and bigger names every day, but I still feel like I haven't like, I don't know. Like there's still like so much like room for growth. You know, I feel like I'm still kind of chipping away at some sort of signature aesthetic, which seems to be like the end goal for a lot of designers. Like I'm certainly not there. Like you know, just the fact that I can make a living doing what I'm doing, I'm really, really grateful. But yeah, I still feel like I'm kind of fumbling around in the dark, you know, but it's been really fun and really stressful. You know, it's all of those things. But, you know, if I could wake up in the morning and get in front of my computer and make some art, that's all I could really ask for. You know, life's been pretty kind.
Yeah. That's really cool.
In that respect.
Yeah. And especially like you said too, to be able to, you know, build a pedigree outside of the context of, you know, being working at a label, you know, cause I think some people when they are attached to a certain thing for a long period of time, they are known to be that person and they have to work within a certain lane, you know? But then now the fact that, you know, your radar of things that you can work on can, you know, fall under a million different purviews as opposed to like, no, I can only take it because of this, you know? And it's like, no, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in this culture, so much of your own personal identity is rooted in your career, like the company you work for or whatever. And, I didn't think I really fell into that category until I pulled the plug at Warner when I told them I was leaving. And I still like, I'm on retainer with them too. So like I left it totally amicably and I still love all the people who work there. But, yeah, I mean, dude, like it was kind of like a personality, like identity crisis leaving there because like for so many years I was like Donnie who works at Warner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. As cool as it is, but then, you know, you kind of get viewed as a one trick pony where it's just like, oh yeah, well that's the sort of stuff that he can do. And it's like, well, I can do different stuff. I just haven't.
I've really been able to kind of like, you know, spread my wings as in terms of like illustrating more, which is something like I'd rather do than just kind of, you know, standard issue art direction, you know, where I'm kind of, you know, hiring other illustrators or photographers or whatever. Yeah. So like, it's been fun to kind of spread my wings and just like live in, like, as soon as I quit Warner, my wife and I packed up and moved to Durango, Colorado. So we're based in Colorado. It's probably one of the more beautiful towns I've ever seen, and I'm lucky to live here and do what I do. Yeah, man.
Well, I was going to say the last thing I was going to mention was the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter where you live, you know, because as long as you're connected to the internet and you can't communicate with people, it doesn't matter. But when I saw that you were going to Durango, I was like, I mean, it makes sense from the, you know, sort of Tehachapi natural beauty to Durango natural beauty.
Yeah.
But, you know, that definitely is an unconventional move because usually people move from places like Durango to, you know, the Los Angeles area as opposed to vice versa. You know, so I guess what was the attachment? The fact that like, hey, I need to move to a place with a, you know, where I can have my headspace and still be creative, or was it just try to get out of the rat race in many respects?
Yeah, absolutely. It was all of those things, you know. I mean, I feel like I did my time, you know, living in LA. Like, I'm grateful for my time there, but you know, and I met a lot of cool people and was able to work at a label and be around music, and I definitely missed the venues and the easy access to culture, you know. Not that there's not culture in Durango, there certainly is. There's a great art scene, there's there's music and whatnot. But I mean, if I'm going to catch a show, I'm going to have to drive to Albuquerque or Denver, which are both, you know, significant drives from Durango, because we're in like the southwest corner of the state. But yeah, I wanted to get to the natural beauty, you know. In many ways, Durango's similar to Tehachapi. You know, it's a railroad town. It's in the mountains, but Durango has a vibe, and Tehachapi, just for one reason or another, hasn't been able to get a vibe going, man. It's just, there's a lot of sadness there. I mean, there's a lot of like redemptive things about Tehachapi too. I don't mean to be too disparaging. Like, my parents still live there. I always look forward to going back. I have a lot of friends that live there. Andy Franchier still lives there. He's a firefighter, you know, real life superhero guy. But yeah, Durango has a college, you know, so there's kind of like a younger scene. And yeah, I mean, it's a great place to live and work. And we found the house that's right for us, so we're buying a house here. And I have a beautiful view off the deck, and that's all I really need, man. I need, you know, I have a great relationship with my wife. And we just got a little dog, you know, life's looking pretty good, man. No complaints.
That's really cool. I like that, especially, you know, because so many people look at, you know, getting out of whatever their circumstances in regards to living in a, you know, larger city or attached to a larger suburb, and then be like, hey, I want to move to a place that like I can actually afford stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, like that's an option. Like, as long as you feel attached to something.
Totally. Like, yeah. And I need that. I need to feel attached. And like, I'm so grateful for all the projects that I still get. Most of the clients I work for are still in the LA area, but, yeah, I mean, I recommend it highly to anyone who just feels kind of like anonymous and lost and just kind of suffocating in a city setting. Like, if you can do it, go somewhere smaller. And, you know, I mean, just to put stuff into perspective, we were paying the same amount in rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Santa Monica as we're paying for a two-story beautiful house on 3 acres in Durango. So
yeah, it's a little different.
Definitely more. Yeah.
A little different vibe.
Yeah. It's crazy. So yeah, man, you got to come visit, right?
I know. I that would be beautiful. I would enjoy that very much though.
We'll hike. We'll get into it.
Exactly. Well, dude, thank you very much for hanging out. I honestly, yeah, I knew I was going to enjoy this. And, you know, sometimes the people that are closest to me, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'll get around to talking to them. But then I was like, no, man, we gotta break this in.
Yeah, man. Dude, just thank you so much for doing it. I mean, I'm honored to be in such great company. Like, your guests are some of my heroes, you know, as a kid, as an adult. So, I mean, to be amongst the greats is humbling, man. Thank you so much.
So there we have it. That was Donnie. And yeah, you absolutely have to check out his studio, his work. You can easily Google it, but the name of his studio is KHIL Studios, and you can find all of his awesome work there. If you're in a band, if you're looking for someone to work with, Donnie is the man. He's done so much great stuff. So thank you very much, Donnie, for carving out some time of your day. And it was a great chat. Yeah, please, like I said, have a good Christmas. Have a good holiday. Enjoy that time. Slow it down. And yeah, hopefully you'll listen to the podcast still, right? Like I said, next week is a bonus episode. It's not your traditional one-on-one interview. It's kind of a roundtable discussion that I have in the van with my fellow bandmates that I think will be fun for you to listen to. So yeah, until then, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
It's
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yimby's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.